the Glove Podcast. I am your host, Gabriella Love. We are back with another psychedelic session. Today we have Fungi on our podcast. I am so excited for two reasons. One, his name is Fungi, and two, he's super passionate about mycology, and I just can't wait to hear all about that. Welcome to the podcast, Fungi. Feel free to take a moment or two to introduce yourself.
Hi, thank you for having me. This is such a cool thing. I've never been on a podcast before. So my name is Fungi. I am 20 years old. I am a junior in my undergrad, and I want to go into applied mycology. So the way I kind of think of that is just putting mycology or the study of fungi towards like relevant worldly problems. So if you've ever heard of bioremediation, that's just using living things to help with pollution or contamination. Oyster mushrooms are really, really good at breaking down oil and other like inorganic pollutants. There's medical mycology, so certain compounds found in fungi have a lot of different uses and potential for human health. And there's also biomaterials, which I'm really interested in. So there's a company called MycoWorks. The CEO and founder, Phil Ross, is super interesting guy. Kind of crazy if you look into it. He started out making art with mushrooms and like sculptures, and he learned so much about how to control the growth of them that he started a company. And first they made like building materials, so like something could work as a 2x4 or insulation or like high density particle board. There wasn't a lot of demand for that though, because this is all pretty new. And so now they're producing like artisanal quality leather, but it's made from mushrooms and it's grown.
What?
Yeah, it's super cool. So yeah, there's all sorts of ways to do cool stuff with mushrooms.
My God, I had no idea. I mean, every single one of those just sounds so cool. Like, my mind is blown. I'm so glad you brought this up. It's, wow. Okay, well, tell me more. Well, first of all, I want to hear more about this. So I definitely want you to elaborate on anything that sort of, like, really excites you. And then, you know, once you've done that, try and kind of tie that in to psychedelic mushrooms. Is there a role that that plays in this sort of passion of yours? How does this all tie together for you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I guess the goal of this is the psychedelic. So I can talk about that last and have that be the most that I talk about. But I really got interested in mushrooms because I was originally wanting to go into wildlife biology, and so it's the worst loss of biodiversity in recorded history due to disease. There's a mass die-off of frogs all across the globe. So in the past 30 years, I think over 200 species have become endangered or extinct, and that's because of this fungus, Batrachochytrium dendrobatidis, or BD for short. So it's a chytrid, which is a waterborne fungus. They swim around in the water, and it affects the frog skin, and it swells up really thick, and they end up like dying of cardiac arrest and dehydration. And there's like mass die-offs because of this. And I wanted to learn more about fungi to figure out how I can start trying to tackle this like terrible problem and thing that's going on in the world. And not a lot of people know about it. But then I just got really, really interested in fungi because I found out that you can build things out of them. They're just crazy, crazy organisms in how they work, like biologically. And yeah, it's kind of like limitless potential at this point. Well, I mean, yeah, limitless, honestly. Because the way that it grows, you can form it into all different shapes. And I guess I should explain So there's like primary metabolites produced by a mushroom and secondary metabolites. Primary metabolites are whatever is expressed from the DNA of the mushroom that is necessary to the function of like continued existence, like just surviving. And a secondary metabolite would be something that's not necessary. So like in a psychedelic mushroom, like creating sugars for energy is necessary, but creating psilocybin is not. It's a deterrent and it's a secondary metabolite. So there's these like secondary compounds in mushrooms that are really, really like unique to each species and do very advanced things, because the way that a fungus is, if you think of like the roots of a tree and the tree and then the apple from the tree, the mushroom is the apple and the tree is the mycelium, which is the main body of the fungus. And that's that white stuff, the filamentous like hair-like things. And so there's like a center point, and then it all kind of branches out from there. And at the tip, the genetic material is changing and exchanging, and whatever is the most successful in growing, in resisting like pathogens, in breaking down food, resisting toxins, will grow faster and more, and that those genetics will spread throughout the fungus, because the nuclei can travel between the cells, which is really interesting. But I don't want to get like too complex. And the cool thing is, mushrooms are like constantly improving and iterating and like getting better at doing whatever they found as their niche, which is a concept in ecology of kind of the role an organism fits in the environment. So like a decomposer or a producer, all that stuff. And so an application of that is there's this fungus, I don't remember the name, but it breaks down wood and it's able to tolerate really high temperatures. So say if you find it in like a big bed of mulch, it'll be in the inside where, like, you know how when you compost you have to turn it because it gets really hot inside? It can withstand those temperatures and it breaks down the wood. And so lignin is something that holds together the cellulose fibers of wood. And in order to make paper, you have to de-lignify the wood. And that lets you take these long stringy fibers and press them into whatever shape you want, which is a sheet of paper. So paper is delignified through like a really chemical intensive process, and that all just gets like washed out into the environment, and it's really nasty when it gets out there. But this fungus can be used to delignify the wood that's used to make paper, and it's completely natural and like cheaper, and it will work at these high temperatures that they do it at. So you could either like the really ineffective way of growing the fungus on the thing, or you could just take the secondary metabolite, like whatever it uses to delignify all these enzymes, and then you just like produce that and use it because it's able to, like, it doesn't denature, it doesn't degrade at high temperatures. That's like just one very specific example of a way that, like, mycology or the study of fungi can be applied to a problem. Or like the bees, there's colony collapse disorder and pollinators are suffering. There's like bees die-offs, and one reason for that, so there's the pesticides that are really bad for them, the neonicotinoids, but there's also colony collapse from the varroa mite, I think it's called. But anyways, it injects them with like diseases and really nasty stuff. But there's like when the fungus is growing, it's one cell thin. So it doesn't have a lot of barriers for anything to go into it. It's not like us where we have three layers of skin that are like so many cells thick. I don't remember, but it's like probably an order of magnitude more. Anyways, so they have to have these compounds that kill off bacteria, viruses, protozoans. So they have a lot of fungi have both antibacterial and viral compounds. And you probably heard of the guy Paul Stamets. He has done a lot of work on Agaricon officinalis, which is it's been touted as the elixir of long life or the fountain of youth or something. I think Socrates or Plato or somebody officially described it as the elixir of long life or something. Anyways, it is called that because it has these antibacterial and antiviral compounds, and they're novel, meaning it's unique to this fungus. And that's important because of like antibiotic resistance from manufactured pharmaceuticals. It's a problem that's building up. So A, it could help antibiotic resistance, period. But B, it also provides like a way that you could have. So he mixed the compounds from that with honey and he put it in feeders. And then when the bees like consumed that, they were like 200 times more resistant to the diseases from this mite. And so better survive colony collapse disorder. So mushrooms can help pollinators. And they can also be used to bioremediate. So, Pleurotus austriatus or blue oyster is really, really an aggressive mushroom and it just breaks down everything and grows really fast. And part of that is it just has a lot of secondary metabolites and it's good at breaking stuff down.
And
So it's also good at.
this is the one that breaks down oil.
Yes, it can break down a lot of like oil and like just like long carbon chains and break those polymers into smaller and smaller chunks that can be processed by the environment. And so there's really like powerful ways that these guys can help. And as we understand more about them and kind of figure out more of how they work and how specific fungi work, there's kind of infinite potential because there's so many different species of fungi that I don't even know, like millions, I don't know the number, but it's high. And each of these fungi will have secondary metabolites that will be unique to them and their niche and their life strategy. And a bunch of those would probably be beneficial when we look at like what do they do, and then what as humans are we trying to do or need to do, or what are certain ways that we're already doing things that are problematic and could be helped. And a part that I'm also really, really interested in is medical mycology. So for example, lion's mane, it's gourmet, as well as blue oysters are a gourmet, but they can also break down oil. So lion's mane, Hericium erinaceus, can treat and help prevent dementia and Alzheimer's. So the reason it does this is because compounds in lion's mane help break down amyloid beta plaque buildup, which is just a plaque that builds up along the axons, or you could think of it as the connecting like wires of the nerves. And it also stops the degradation of the myelin sheath, which you can think of as insulation for those wires. And those two characteristics are the main kind of telltales of like Alzheimer's or dementia, and that's why your neural connections don't work properly, and that's why you get those symptoms. But it's really important that those two things are like prevented. The degradation of the sheath and the buildup of that plaque. And so once you, if you already are symptomatic, like having the disease, It will slow the progression because the myelin sheaths will stop degrading, and then it'll also alleviate some of the symptoms because it will dissolve that plaque buildup. So it's like really, really cool, powerful stuff that this can do. Like I've known a lot of people with relative, like I've been fortunate to not have a relative have, or at least an immediate relative have dementia or Alzheimer's. But it's a terrible, terrible disease where you lose yourself. And so that's like a really, really powerful thing. Lion's mane also has like some anti-cancerous properties where it promotes apoptosis or programmed cell death of cancerous cells to work. Like just basically cancer is uncontrolled cell growth. The cell's regulatory processes are out of check, and then it just grows and grows and it messes stuff up. So it kind of helps the cells and the immune system identify those problematic cells and tell them to die. So I'm taking lion's mane for the mental benefits. So I'm not like I'm preventing those characters of the diseases. It also has some like slight alleviation of symptoms of anxiety. And I am also taking cordyceps, which is really interesting. It's a mushroom that parasitizes insects, and it will like the insects will crawl up on a twig, and then the mushroom will fruit because the mycelium is in there, and then the fruit or the mushroom will come out of it, and then it'll drop all its spores. So it kind of like controls it to go up high, and then it can spread spores faster. But the cool thing is, it contains cordycepic acid, cordycepin, and that it helps oxygenate the blood. I think I should be talking about the studies where I'm getting this information from.
Well, so hold on. I just I really don't want to
Oh,
interrupt
go
you
for it.
because I'm really enjoying listening to you. But I so just to backtrack for a moment, how are you taking these? Or like what does that actually look
Right,
like?
so I take them as a supplement, and it would be like just a mushroom powder. And
Gotcha.
there's different ways to extract these compounds from the mushroom, and it can be really complex, but most basically, or like in reality, it's kind of simple. So a molecule can be either polar or nonpolar. So basically, we'll have charge or not have a charge. And then there's a rule in chemistry, like dissolves like. So water is polar, and something like methanol is nonpolar. And so these compounds in the mushrooms will be either nonpolar or polar. And so you essentially like steep it in water, a polar solvent, to extract those compounds. And then you do that for a while, and then you'll get all the polar stuff out. And importantly, the heat will also break down the cell wall of the mushroom, which helps you get more out of it and also opens up, or not opens up, but like allows you to get more of the polar compounds. And so then you can use methanol. At my work, oh, I should have said, I'm interning at a mushroom farm, and that's pretty cool.
Wow,
And so we're
cool.
working on
Yeah.
work like just extracting these medicinal compounds from mushroom called reishi, which is Ganoderma lucidum, I believe. And that's like long been used in Asian cultures as a medicinal mushroom. But so what we do there is we boil it, and then we have it in jars of Everclear, actually, because alcohol is, let me see, is alcohol nonpolar? Well, yeah, The alcohol works and it extracts like the other stuff, and then you can have like a single extraction, so like a hot extraction, which is the water or the alcohol extraction, or a dual extraction, which is you mix the two in whatever ratio you want, and then you could have like tinctures of liquid, but I take it in a powder form, which is you just like dehydrate that. And it's, I should say, it's really important that you do your research, because there's supplements are not regulated by the FDA, and there's a lot of companies out there that are kind of not putting what they say they're putting in there. So you could pay like a lot of money for these supplements because you're like, okay, this will help my grandma with Alzheimer's, or you know, this or that, and then you won't be getting much. Paul Stamets has done a lot for mycology. He's really like, that's how I got really interested in mushrooms. I watched a Paul Stamets TED Talk. But his brand Host Defense has had a independent certification of analysis, or like they looked at what was in these pills, and it's 70% starch, because the way that that company grows their product is they grow the mushroom on rice, and then they just grind up the rice and the mushroom together. Or they grow the mycelium is on the rice, it doesn't fruit. And so then they just powder that, and then that's what you get in the capsule. But certain companies will take the fruit body or the actual mushroom, and then they'll use it on that. Or there's a way to grow mycelium suspended in liquid, and you can take that mycelium and work with that. So yeah, just do, you can do your research. There's a subreddit, mushroom supplements, where I get a lot of really good studies and like information about it. But yeah, so there's like that medical mycology. And that is probably a good segue into psychedelics, because yeah, there's just such ridiculous, amazing, exciting, and I don't even know, like revolutionary power in psychedelics. I'm sure you've talked about Roland Griffiths and the really cool work coming out of Johns Hopkins University.
Well, so before we go into that, I just want to take a moment to say thank you for sharing about all of that. I think for me, this is really piquing my interest, and you have no idea. I am sitting here thinking, I wish this were a monologue, so I could just sit here and listen to you share all of this. And now I'm super interested in finding out more because I had no idea that there was so much potential and so much like so many possibilities for real world applications with fungi. Like just zero clue. So yeah, I just want to take a moment to say thank you for sharing all of that. And I could listen to you talk about that for a very long time. So I think I think I definitely want to have you back on as a guest, and maybe on a different session so that we can really spend more time focused on mycology and the different kinds of things that you think are very interesting. That said, yes, let's dive right into psychedelics because I'm sure knowing, having heard you speak on mycology, I'm sure you've got a very interesting perspective on what's possible with psychedelics. So, yeah, go right ahead.
Well, first, thank you for your kind words and comments. My friends all joke and fondly make fun of me for just talking people's ear off about mushrooms. So I could do that all day. And I would love to be back. But psychedelics are really powerful for their applications. Johns Hopkins is a university. They're doing a lot of work on it, and Roland Griffiths specifically. I guess I should back up. So currently in the U.S., psychedelic compounds. Well, I'm going to talk about psilocybin because I'm most knowledgeable about psilocybin. It's a Schedule One compound, and Schedule One compound means that, or in the war on drugs lingo means no beneficial like scientific or medical use, so there's in air quotes no point to studying it, and its potential for like serious harm and addictive potential. So now the facts on psilocybin are that it is probably one of the safest drugs out there that you can take. There's not really a potential for addiction. There's like a lot of studies showing how it is really beneficial for breaking addictions. I can talk about that later, but yeah, so currently it's Schedule One. I think it got either decriminalized or legalized in Oregon and certain counties across the US, and I think Chicago has decriminalized it.
Colorado.
Oh yeah, that's what I meant. Colorado. I always confuse the Western states, but anyways. It's really, really powerful. And I guess I'll talk about how it works in the brain to demonstrate like why it's so powerful. So, serotonin is kind of thought of as like a happiness release, happiness chemical. But it's also really important for a number of other processes in the brain and consciousness. And I'm not a neurobiologist or a psychologist or anything, but I do know that psilocybin or the serotonin pathways, two important ones are the 5-HT1A, 2A, and 2C, I believe. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that correctly. And psilocybin. Or so serotonin is a neurotransmitter that acts on those neurons, those receptors. Psilocybin can also function as almost like fake serotonin. It can fit into those same receptors, and so it's a serotonin receptor agonist. It stimulates those receptors, so it's almost like your brain is flooded with an analog of serotonin. And because of that increased presence there, there's more connectivity in your brain. There's a really cool figure or like scientific graphic out there that shows it's like a circle and there's a bunch of lines between it, and it shows like normal brain activity and the connectivity between different neural pathways and different neurons. And then on psilocybin, all the like it's much more connected. It's like a dream catcher versus like a knitted sweater in the inside of the graphic.
Right.
And so it's re really really powerful because so I've had experience with depression and anxiety growing up in most of my life. And I have found a lot of help with psychedelics. I've also done a lot of like work with mindfulness and just on my own, but this greatly, greatly expedited that and was a wonderful tool. Yeah, I guess I should say I have tripped a bunch of times, and I've started to microdose recently, and I actually made like precisely measured out microdose capsules
Nice.
recently,
Very nice.
and those have been awesome. Actually, I microdosed today, got a
Nice.
bunch of schoolwork
Me
done.
too.
I've been happy. Nice. So SSRIs stand for selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. In English, that means it blocks the serotonin receptors from uptaking the serotonin, or it just blocks the reuptake of the serotonin. So as your body produces it, there's kind of more in circulation, but eventually your body's like, okay, there's a lot of serotonin, I don't need to produce it as much, and then the serotonin levels fall.
Right.
And I was on SSRIs, and they really didn't work for me. They kind of made me feel like unmotivated, and just, people talk about feeling like robots and stuff, and pretty accurate. But the powerful thing about psilocybin is it doesn't block the reuptake. It's just an analog of serotonin that also agonizes or interacts and stimulates those receptors. So it there's not like that block of the reuptake which can really alter the levels and the neurochemistry you have. But I'm not like an expert on that, so I'm not gonna go about making any recommendations or any type of stuff. But it's just like really interesting that that's how they work, and they're very powerful in the way that they work because that increased connectivity of the brain allows you to kind of step to the side of the neural pathways or the neural ruts or like the habits you formed or associations you have. And so that's why when you trip, there's a feeling of like connectivity and euphoria, and if you feel like things make sense or you come to realizations because it's that increased connectivity. And that can allow you to like bridge like say there's a stimuli, or I should say a habit or like a pathway. There's a spike of neural activity at the stimuli, then you run through the response to the behavior, and then there's another spike at the reward. And so you kind of have these mental ruts you go in, and so if you're an addict, say you like drink a lot, the stimuli could be like going home, and then you're like, okay, I have this craving for alcohol. Or say you are very anxious or you have PTSD. Yeah, PTSD is like a really big thing
A
to
big
be
one.
helped as well. So you have PTSD and like certain stimuli, like sights or sounds or flashes or whatever, set you off. Psilocybin can help you kind of step around those neural pathways and forge new ones. And then I should also mention it has neurogenerative properties. So it stimulates neuron growth. And yeah, so it can help you form these new pathways and grow into better ways of being and not fall a victim to your neurochemistry and ingrained habits and stuff. I can share an anecdote. I hiked the Boundary Waters, and I've had a phobia of parasites since I was young. Like I grew up watching Animal Planet and like the Discovery Channel and all those sorts of things. And so I'd be falling asleep and monsters inside me would come on and it just scared the hell out of me or like creeped me out. But it was like biology, so I still watched it. And so like anytime I would have a tick in me from camping, because I've camped a lot, I would freak out and I would get it out. But it would just be like a very like stressful kind of traumatic experience. And just all the things that monsters inside me would show you I was scared of. And so up at the Boundary Waters, there's like clouds of mosquitoes and so many ticks and like leeches in the water and shit. And the first night there, I at the last campsite, I like swam in the lake, and there was a leech next to my privates. And I screamed so loud, I heard like the yells echo across the water. It was yeah, like I was scared of parasites. And so that kind of like that was the theme. Like I'd find a tick in me and I'd get freaked out. And as I was watching, I was like compulsively like swiping at my arms to brush off any ticks that would be walking on me. And I was like wearing a white shirt and like checking for the little spots of the ticks. And I had everything tucked into everything. And I was just like I was trying to focus on the nature and everything, but I was just like, oh, I can't let like anything be on me. And then I think the second or the third day, we all took mushrooms, and it was beautiful and amazing to be in nature in such untouched nature. But the important part was like I was trying to like handle all the being on mushrooms while trying to build a fire and like also do the swiping and then like checking for ticks and everything. And then something in me was just like,
Yeah.
what? Like, why are you doing that? That's, like, why are you doing that? And I just stopped, like wiping off my arms or even like checking for ticks. And I was like, if I get a tick, I'll get a tick. Like, I'll just take it out, And then I just enjoyed my experience. I built a fire, I made a meal. It was awesome. And it was kind of crazy. Like 3 or 4 butterflies started landing on me, and I was like covered in DEET. So I don't get why that happened. It wasn't like a huge dose, so I didn't hallucinate this. Like my friends who were there all saw the butterflies, so they were landing on me, and then like a citrus longhorn beetle landed on me, and it was just so cool. And I was like, bugs are awesome. And ever since, like that later that day and like the rest of the days in the trip, whenever I'd get a tick, I like wouldn't even say anything. I would just like ask for the tweezers. And before I would like have to have the tweezers in my pocket to like make me not feel freaked out. And then like when I've
Right.
gotten ticks since, or just other sort of stuff, I'm not like freaked out and stuff. And that's, so that's an example of like these kind of holdovers or things that you have ingrained. You can really just kind of easily get over them in these states and with the help of these compounds. And yeah, it's super powerful. So like it can help with PTSD, depression, anxiety, and treatment resistant depression and anxiety, and I think PTSD, which is the important part, because treatment resistant depression anxiety is defined as when it doesn't get better after however many weeks or however many like different things you've tried, and it's just kind of chronic. And there's a, I don't know the specific statistics, but there's like a lot of people in that boat, myself included. And this, like, these compounds have just so much potential for this. It's kind of ridiculous. Like, if you look at the studies in Johns Hopkins, oh yeah, so Roland Griffiths, I was gonna say, the psychedelics became, I'm hopping all over the place, but psychedelics became Scheduled One with the war on drugs and Nixon. And then there was like a lot of preliminary research, and it was kind of like starting to bubble, and everybody's getting excited in it. You probably heard of like MK Ultra, where the US Army was giving like people and dolphins LSD, stupid shit like that.
And so do you know why it was like why that decision was made for psilocybin to go under Schedule One? Like, do you know why that happened?
No, I don't think so. It was really associated with the counterculture movement, so like hippies and Woodstock and all that.
Right.
And Nixon was all like, rrr, rrr, and war on drugs and put like cocaine in all these neighborhoods. Anyways, it was outlawed, and I don't think there's really good reason at all, other than it was a drug and it was kind of becoming synonymous with the counterculture movement because it facilitates these paradigm shifts and kind of not to be cliche, to not drinking the Kool-Aid anymore. Yeah, so it was outlawed, and then all this research just stopped, at least in the US. And in 2000, Roland Griffiths petitioned to the, I think, USDA or FDA, some one of those, and said, hey, let me study this. And they said, okay, but here's all these like regulations and rules, and like you probably have to pay money or something. And so he studied it, and really like amazing initial reports and results in the studies. And I should say these studies are mostly under like clinical circumstances. So you get like a blindfold and headphones, or like a therapist sitting next to you, and they guide you through the experience. And it's like you're in a lab setting, but the lab could be like you're sitting on a couch or something, but you're in a lab setting. And it's a very guided experience, and they also heavily filter out People with like family history of like bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or any kind of dissociative disorders, because there is a risk of inducing episodes of those disorders with the compound. Like, it's a small risk, but it's a risk, and it's unethical to not filter that out. So that's an important thing to consider with these studies, and also your own psychedelic use or utilization. So Roland Griffiths was able to study it, found a lot of cool stuff, like, hey, it can really help depression, anxiety, PTSD. That's mainly what I've looked into, but there's probably other stuff. And he actually petitioned, he also like got kind of like paved the way for other researchers to look at psychedelics. So now there's studies with like MDMA, ayahuasca, ketamine, all sorts of crazy stuff. And that kind of paved the way for that. And now he's petitioned to the American government, hey, look at all these study results. Look at how safe it is. Don't have it be scheduled one. And here's a signature of like a ton of scientists who agree with me.
Right. And this was 2000.
So the him petitioning to be able to study it was 2000. I don't know when he petitioned to have the schedule changed. I can look it up.
Well, I was just asking because I was curious. 2000 isn't that long ago. That's only 20 years. So in the
Right.
last 20 years, there's been a significant increase in research around psilocybin and as well as other psychedelics, which is really great to see. And it does look like there are tons of companies out there that are heavily invested in, the legalization of things like psilocybin, and they're sort of ready to go. So I'm happy to hear that you've explored so much of this arena, because I think often, more often than not, this isn't really the part of psychedelics that a lot of people spend time on. That time is definitely most often spent on the trips or, the experiences that people have in general, not necessarily on the science and the interaction of the fungi with the brain. And like that is just really, really cool stuff. Yeah, carry on.
Well, yeah, thank you. I figure if I'm gonna be altering my state of consciousness and all sorts of fun stuff like that, I should figure out how it works and like if it's safe and stuff. And it's also just fascinating. So
Oh, yeah.
yeah, I'm trying to find when he recommended the schedule change.
Yeah. While you're doing that, what was your first experience with mushrooms like?
So I went to Amsterdam with my partner at the time, and this was like a 2 week trip that we took, and we flew in and out of Amsterdam, but we were also gonna like go around in Germany. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm gonna take truffles there. And I was experiencing like some problems with depression and all that peachy stuff. And I was like, I think, this will be really beneficial for me. And so I went to Fondle Park, which is this huge, huge, ridiculous park. I think it's like the greater one in whatever greater area of Europe that Amsterdam is in.
Okay.
And there's just like crazy sculptures, and like it's like a huge kind of playground if you're on mushrooms. And there's I don't know if you can even call it a head shop, really. Well, yeah, there's like stuff that messes with your head. I don't know. Anyways, there's a we got like little like Tupperware containers of
Okay.
truffles, and I just was mind blown that for 12 euros I can get a little to-go box of fucking mushrooms. And so importantly, they're not mushrooms because mushrooms are the fruiting body. They're sclerotia, which is an underground storage structure for the fungus, because the actual fruiting bodies like mushrooms were, they used to be legal, but they were outlawed because of, they say it's because tourists were coming and like using them and going crazy. But the two main cases that they used were, it's really fucked up. This guy was like found in a van and he like murdered a dog. And he was like, oh, I was on mushrooms and mushrooms made me do it. And if anybody's taken mushrooms, you know they're not gonna like, you're not gonna just be like, I'm gonna murder a fucking dog. And then another girl committed suicide and said it was like on mushrooms or something. I think it was like a French tourist. And so a lot of things were like blamed on mushrooms, and the legislators were like, ban mushrooms. But the sclerotia were still legal, and they're a lot less potent. So there was like a bunch of breeding probably that they, or definitely that they did to get it more potent. So you have to eat less, and you also can't sell dried fungus now, because so mushrooms are like 80% to 90% some ridiculous water content. So when you dry them, it's like a tenth or something of the weight, but it's, so basically by eating like a dried amount versus a wet amount, or a wet amount, there's, it's like 10 times as potent. So I had to buy like the wet truffles, and so we took them in Fondle Park, and I had never had an experience with psilocybin, and we were just walking around. It's a beautiful place, and we're walking by this creek, and I start kind of like feeling just happy. We're like happier, 'cause it's, you're gonna be happy there, but happier. And I just was smiling, and I was like really like looking at the plants and stuff, and I was already just kind of giggly and like euphoric, but I was like, did that leaf just wiggle? And so then I just started like staring at the ground, and my partner was like, whoa, what are you looking at? And I was like, yo, those are like wiggling. And then yeah, so I was getting the visuals, and it was really intense. I don't know what the equivalent I took in like American illicit buying and consuming is, but I probably took like, I think it was, the little Tupperwares were like 12 grams, and I ate like almost all of it, but it was square. Anyways, maybe like a 3 or 4 dried gram trip of the fruiting body here in America. I don't really know. I haven't gone that high since. But yeah, I looked at my partner's face, and she was like, her face was like kind of morphing towards her hairline and towards the back, and it was, very technicolor, and I felt like I could see her as like 80 years old, but at the same time like how old she was then. And I was like, whoa, like I feel like I'm seeing like your whole lifetime right now. And at the time, I was like, whoa, I'm seeing our whole life together. And I was like, started crying from happiness and shit. And I climbed up like this huge tree that was really thin. There's like a really funny photo of me like super high up in a thin tree, just because I like wanted to do that. And there's a section of Fondle Park where there's like a bunch of like cool basket swings that like two or three people can chill in, and behind it there's a area for like fort building
Yep.
and like monkey bars and a playground and stuff. So I was like, we carrying this like huge pole and like building the forts, and it felt like very primal and like naturey. And then we really had to pee, or she really had to pee, so we had to go. and there's this like fountain kind of near there in this big lawn area and a little like pool, and there's a ton of people there. So there's like a calisthenics or like whatever class, so like people working out and like a bunch of kids running around playing the pool and like people jogging, and it was just intense. It was crazy. But in the pool, so they're like little kids, and they're these little like stepping stones, these like circle things in an arc, like that go into the pool and then back to the edge. And I just sprinted on that. And as I was sprinting, I realized like there's a little kid like in between two of those with like floaties and shit. So I like just leap over
Oh
them and I
God.
clear like two of those stones. And then I like keep running and I come back and then I. Because me and my partner were like walking to one of the exits to find a bathroom, and I saw that thing, and I was just like, I have to go run on that. And yeah, it was really cool. I felt awesome. And we, so Amsterdam is Amsterdam, but we exit, and we the first like place we find is called the Africa Cafe, and we walk in looking for the bathroom, and then there's just like a lion head, a zebra head, like animal skins everywhere, like drums and shit, and like they're playing like tribal music, and it was just a trip. Like, of course, that's the place I walked to my first time taking psychedelics, like in a foreign country that I don't speak the
Right.
language. And yeah, I'm sure we just looked out of our minds to the people because they were like, oh, hey, can we help you? They're like, s they were so nice. They were so nice. But yeah, I was like, I bathroom, and I was just like looking at these zebra heads and shit, and I went into the bathroom. Of course, you know, there's mirrors in bathroom, but it was like a very tiny, it was like a cubicle, and the walls and the floor, I don't remember the ceiling, but they were all like tiled in a checkerboard, and the checkerboard was this like rust color and white, and that was all just like wiggling and crazy, and it was like jungle themed in the bathroom too, and I just looked at myself for so long, it felt like so long, but then I remembered like, wait, like my partner used the bathroom, we're in like a foreign city, so I like get out quick, and she's just waiting outside, and it was probably like way too intense for her in there. But yeah, then like that was probably around my peak, and we came down just walking around this like really really beautiful part of Amsterdam, really cool buildings, and we sat down at this really busy intersection at a table and just kind of like people watched. There's a lady just standing on her balcony in a crazy dress, like a medieval dress, and it was just billowing in the wind, and it looked like something out of painting. And the waiter came up to me, is like, "Oh, may I help you?" Da 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 da. And I was just like, "Oh," like just kind of freaking out because he scared me. I was like, "Oh no, I'm just sitting here." And he saw that he scared me, and he probably saw that my eyes were saucers. And he's like, "Oh no, dude, sit here as long as you want." And yeah, so I did, and then we got really hungry, so we pulled up this like, my partner is vegan, and so we were using this app called Happy Cow to like find vegan places, and we really were craving Thai food, so we found this Thai place, and actually, this was after we rode the rail trying to get there, but we ended up riding it to the end of the line, and it was like this weird like suburb. I don't even know where it was, but it was beautiful and idyllic, and we sat at this like, so you know how there's all those little like creeks and brooks with little bridges? It was like kind of like a marshy one of those in a more residential setting. And to the back of us was like the sunset and a huge field and hills and trees. And in front of us was like these cute little brick houses, and we're just staring at this creek and these like things waving in the wind, the cattails waving in the wind, and then this little like orange tabby cat comes up and starts like rubbing up against us, and it was awesome. And they're like, "All right, let's get back." And we try to find that place again, and after like a lot of shenanigans, we get there, and the like place on the map, it's just like a pile of like furniture stacked on the outside and nothing on the inside. And turns out they like closed or something or left. And we're like, well, fuck, what do we do now? And we just found another place, and it was amazing and just like a really, really nice afterglow. And I felt like I had so many realizations and like things that I wanted to work about and think about. And unfortunately, I didn't like have the time just to like reflect and integrate, which are two like really important and in my opinion, like you really just should do that like with any trip. But I didn't have the opportunity because it was just like go, 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 like ride the train to Germany, like figure out all this stuff for like 2 weeks. But in the trip since then, I've had that time to reflect and like ponder, and I think that's one of the most beneficial parts of tripping.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. That was hands down one of my favorite stories to have heard of a first time trip or first time
Oh yeah.
experience. Yeah, that was great. And I you're like that made me want to go to Amsterdam and go to that park for sure. I've never heard of this park, but it sounds like a playground for adults and children.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it straight up is.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Cool. So integration, let's talk about that. Well, first of all, I've got a question for you. So you're currently microdosing psilocybin. How long have you been microdosing, and are there any differences that you find, in terms of the experience and the benefits that you gain from psilocybin, microdosing versus a full-on trip or journey?
Yeah, so, I grew them for the first time over this winter, which was a
Nice.
feat in the winters around here. And so I was not really like specifically measuring them. I would just take like a tiny little bit, and that was really nice. I think the first time I microdosed was when I got skimped, when I bought mushrooms once, and I didn't want to take all of them, so I just took like half of it. And or maybe it was just like a very, very not that intense trip. But anyways, I just felt like happy and motivated, and like I was getting so much more joy out of all the stuff that happened. When you microdose, you're using them as a medicine and not like as a like a fun party thing, which in my opinion, mushrooms are not like a party kind of recreational. Like they're recreational, sure, you can have fun on them, but it's not like, I don't know, that you can kind of seriously like your mind state is very malleable. Anyways, you should always like measure, like if you're trying to microdose. So what I was doing is typically to the recommendations for microdosing psilocybin is you grind it up really fine, then you put it in capsules, weighed precisely. I just kind of like either weighed out like a tiny bit of like unground mushroom, or just from doing that, eyeballed it. Which, it's not like best practice, but I knew enough and like how I reacted to it that it would be fine. But the first time I ever did it was kind of accident because it was way before I ever grew them. I got skimped, and it wasn't like enough for a trip, and I didn't know any better because that was like one of my first times ever buying them. And so I just felt like happy and motivated, and like I was getting so much pleasure out of things. I remember I was playing like Spotify on my TV, and there's this band I really like called Lightning Bolt, and it's just it's a crate, like it started out as an art piece. It's like noise rock or noise music, just like a lot of stuff at once. But anyways, there's this song on their newest record at the time called Halloween 3, and I was just like jamming out to the music, but then I was like, damn, the song's awesome. And I looked at the name Halloween 3, and I just started laughing so much because the concept of like Halloween 3 was so funny to me, but it also just like caused me a lot of joy that they'd be like silly like that and name the song Halloween 3, and I like got like my eyes teared up. So it was like more than a microdose, but it wasn't like a full-blown trip, because a proper microdose is sub-perceptual. But that kind of opened my eyes. I was like, whoa, like this feels like the like actual 2 days that SSRIs worked before they worked against my favor. And when those 2 days on the SSRIs, I was like, is this how I am normally? Because the people around me were like, whoa, you're like really you're like hyped up, you're very talkative and like making jokes and like shooting the shit and stuff. And I'm typically like introverted. Like I'm able to socialize fine, but I'm not really like cracking jokes all the time, like in school or something. Anyways, so now that I've measured them out, I grew them, I've been microdosing, it's been really, really helpful, because I think one of the most lingering symptoms of depression, and I don't think this is so much tied in with anxiety, but I've done a lot of mindfulness work and just been practicing mindfulness for a while. I've been meditating for a while. And that's like really powerful when aided with psychedelics. I think Roland Griffiths done some studies with people, experienced like meditators and people with mindfulness practice, who like they went to a retreat and then some tripped and some didn't, and they found like a lot more profound experiences. Da da da. Anyways, I've had that practice going, and I've kind of been able to, if you know the word scumble, it's a painting concept where, I like the term. It's the title of a children's book I read, where people have powers, but scumble is when you like are painting and you actually put a color or like a brush stroke that's like really glaring and brighter or whatever, and you can't like erase it or take it back or remove it, or so you don't like paint it over. You scumble the rest of the painting to complement and fit in with that thing, or you like make that not so blaring and bright anymore, and it kind of fits in with the rest of the painting and it looks like it fits. So I really like that concept for mental health, because it's not like you'll delete it from your life. You just kind of learn how to manage it better and kind of nip stuff in the bud, or you will process either trauma or certain patterns of thought patterns or whatever sort of deal. So I've done a lot of like progress with that through mindfulness, but I still find issues with, my friend recently told me this term, because I didn't, it was a really succinct way of saying it, executive function. So the ability to like start tasks or like get up out of bed in the morning, or kind of like the opposite of procrastination. Just being able to like start tasks. So if you are like, oh, I don't want to clean my room, or oh, I don't want to like make a meal for myself because that's too much work. It's helped me a lot with that. A lot with just like catching up in school or just being on top of school. Like, so I'm like doing research right now, and I'm have this mushroom internship, and I'm like doing school full time, and then I'm also trying to have like a free life or free time in my own life, or I like want to draw and pursue my own interests. So there's a lot of stuff on my plate, and being able to like not balk at managing or living my life is like really just amazing. Like it that has been really powerful for me, to be able to just like start doing things and not have the pattern of not doing this thing, feel bad about not doing this thing, then just feel bad in general, and then don't do things because you feel bad and aren't in a mind state conducive to either just being productive or like being intentional, or however you want to say it. So that's been super helpful. And also, it's up to my mood. I think people find me more talkative, and I'm more like upbeat or energetic. I'm more like creative with problem solving or certain things. I feel like kind of life comes more intuitively to me when I'm microdosing. But I should say it's really important to say microdosing or psychedelics are not like a magic pill. Like it's a tool that helps you do the work.
Oh yeah, totally. It's the same. I mean, same applies with mindfulness, with meditation, really all of these things. These are all methods. These are all tools, and they're available and accessible. Well, some more so than others, but they are a tool. They're not the magic pill. And I think I'm glad you said that, because for me, I think this it's important to clarify that and recognize that is the case, specifically with things that we often take on as sort of this like answer to everything or this magic pill. And we do that with things like meditation or yoga or I don't know, even relationships. But we tend to use all of these things and start to identify them as these like magic pills, and really they're not. They're all tools, and they all have different benefits that they offer, and those benefits you really only get so as much out of them as you're willing to put in. So it really is, it's not just about the thing itself, and that just sort of ties back into what you were saying earlier about in your opinion, mushrooms or psilocybin isn't necessarily something to use as a party drug or something of that nature. There are these meaningful benefits that can really have this positive impact in our lives. And so the same applies in that way when we're looking at something like psilocybin or ayahuasca or really anything out there that we can, gain benefits from. We can certainly abuse them. We can use them and not gain those benefits. It really it's a sort of it's a symbiotic relationship where we the benefits that we gain are a reflection of the work and the effort that we put in, as well as the intention and the mindset that we have.
Definitely, definitely. I think you said it really, really well. Something that kind of came to mind while you're saying that is, so I am an artist. I draw a lot, primarily pen and ink, but I've had some difficulties approaching that, and I don't really have a background in art. I'm just kind of self-taught. Like I'm studying biology and stuff. So it's been a kind of a process for me, and a lot of times I feel feelings of inadequacy towards what I create. And I never really understood about or the saying or the concept that it's about the process. It's not about like the finished product. And recently I've started to understand that more, and I think it applies to everything really well, 'cause like life is not about the destination, it's about the journey. It's about the process of living. And not just like surviving, but living. And so like with art, it's not about create like having I used to have like, okay, I want this big body of work. I want to like build it up so I can have a show. But really, art is about creating. Drawing is about drawing, and living is about living. So like these ma the magic kind of pill, I guess conceptualization of psychedelics is similar. And I find that it helps me enjoy the process of living a lot more.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. Hey, I would love to have you back for a part two, because I think we have way more to talk about. There's so much more to say here. I've really enjoyed having a conversation with you. I have to wrap it up now.
For sure.
I've got some people waiting for me, but yes, I genuinely feel like this has been an incredible conversation, and there were so many things there that I wanted to unpack, but I knew that we had a bit of a time sensitive period that we were working with, and so I didn't want to take up too much of the space in the conversation by inserting like my commentary. But I would definitely want to continue this conversation. So yeah, thank you for this conversation. So far, it has been an absolute pleasure, and more than anything, thank you for introducing this audience for the people that are listening that haven't heard of mycology or of these, the myriad of benefits that fungi offer, and just the limitless potential, as you put it, of just real world application. That was truly an incredible thing for you to share. So thank you. And yeah, let's wrap this up. If you've got any final thoughts, this would be the time.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you creating this space and sharing this topic with people. I think it's really important. There's a lot of stigmas associated with psychedelics, and a lot of times it's not really well understood. So I think it's very important just to talk about them frankly and openly and honestly. And so I would like what you're doing here is really important. Mycology is awesome. Biology is awesome, and I think it's just really interesting lenses to look at the world. So I would love to come back whenever you'd like to have me. I sh figure I should address the people who are listening. Thank you for listening to this, having this interest. If you want resources to look into mycology, there are mycological societies wherever you live, 1,000,000%, and they do really cool things, like forays where you go foraging. There's like workshops on how to grow them, and mushrooms are pretty like set them there and forget. You just water them. So if you want gourmets, you can just do that. Start meditating. Start looking into stuff. And yeah, enjoy the process. Thank you.
And that was episode 29 here at the Glove Podcast. That was Fungi, Mr. Fungi. I wanted to keep going with that conversation. It's unfortunate that I ran out of time on my end, but I am definitely hoping to have him on again because there was just so much to unpack, and he's just a fountain of knowledge, specifically scientific knowledge, which I think is super important. It's super important to talk about that perspective and that angle on things as well. And it's just incredibly refreshing. And really, I mean, mycology, seriously, my mind was blown. Mycology is probably the coolest thing I've heard recently and this year, although it's only been a month. But you know what? In the last 2 to 5 years, I'd say it's one of the coolest things that's been brought to my attention, and I can't wait to dive deeper into that. And I hope that it was equally enjoyable for you. I hope you enjoyed that conversation, and stick around for part two with Mr. Fungi. Thanks again for listening. Thank you for your support. Please do share this far and wide. I could use all the support I can get in terms of sharing the podcast and getting it out there, and just sort of growing my audience. And if you want to come on the show, hey, please feel free to reach out. I would love to have a conversation with you. Once again, this was the Glove Podcast. My name is Gabrielle Love. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.